My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I am so excited to be back with y'all this week, and I'm super excited about the topic for today. So I did a recent survey for the podcast listeners via my listserv. So I sent out a survey and asked folks to give me feedback on what they're liking about the podcast and things they would love to hear more about and all that type of stuff. And so one of the things that kept coming up, and something that I've also heard just from y'all in the DMs and the comments, is to talk more about ADHD. And even when I post things on TikTok, that being a Black woman with ADD or ADHD is such a common occurrence, or at least the symptoms of it, at least, and learning how to navigate that and how it impacts your life. And so one, having the representation of it, and two, getting tips and tricks that help you is really, really is something that y'all are very, very appreciative of and that you would like to hear more of. So that's what I'm going to be doing this episode. This episode, I'm going to be talking about the top 15 things. Yes, I said 15. The top 15 things that I do to help me stay on track with my ADD. I have the inattentive type, which makes it very hard to focus, very hard to complete tasks, very hard to take care of yourself in your everyday life. And so there have been some things that I've had to put into place to help me stay on track. And by the way, this is irregardless, or maybe especially if you are someone who is traditionally very smart, very independent, very self-reliant, very, very much able to take care of other people. Even when you're very much able to take care of other people, that does not eliminate the fact that this can be very hard for you. And if anything, a lot of times you may put a lot of pressure on yourself to be perfect, because you may have a lot of people who are relying on you. So hopefully this helps to neutralize a lot of those expectations, or at least give you some next steps for you to take if this is something that you relate to. So that's it. Let's go ahead and jump on in. Before we jump in, just a little bit of a disclaimer. So yes, I am a licensed mental health professional. However, my specialization is not ADHD. In fact, when I first shared about my diagnosis with ADHD, I shared how I was diagnosed during COVID. And so though I had learned about ADHD, I had never really been able to apply the symptoms to me because I was still very, very high functioning, and also very high functioning in my trauma to really overcompensate for all the ways that my ADHD was showing up. So it wasn't until later on that I was able to finally put some things together. With that said, as I'm not a specialist in this disorder, I am probably not going to be using all of the right language and terminology around it, meaning I might be describing something and there is a word that if you are knowledgeable, trained in, teach, coach, whatever, ADHD, you'll be like, oh, that's this. So I just wanted to give y'all that heads up that I will be talking about this informally. And I'll also say a little bit more after the jump about how some of the things that I'm going to be suggesting that I do for ADHD may not work for everyone. But I just really feel that it's really best for you to do what works for you and leave the rest. So that's it. Let's go ahead and jump on it. Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
So one thing that I've learned when it comes to working with ADD or ADHD is that there's a variety of information and a variety of tips and tricks that a lot of folks will give that will sometimes help, and sometimes it might make things a little bit more complicated for you.
or it may seem like a non-answer. And this could just be the nature of social media or the nature of the fact that you have to actually live these things out sometimes to practically apply it. But with all that said, I have learned, because sometimes I'll hear a tip from one person that is either direct contradiction for what would work for me. Like if I did that, it would drive me insane. That it would completely dysregulate me and completely throw me off versus put me on track. And then there is some advice that's really good that one person says, and then there's advice that another person says, but they actually conflict within themselves. So I have found that it's best for you to take what you need, take the ones that work for you, and then leave the rest. So you may really appreciate some of the things that I share. I think some of the things that I share might be good for folks who aren't neurodivergent even, and just they are people who maybe like and appreciate routines, or maybe you need to get started on your own routine and you need to kind of clear up the ways that you operate in your everyday life. So some of this may be helpful to you, or maybe things that you already naturally do. But again, take what you need, leave the rest, and make adjustments where it fits you. So the first tip that I have that is probably one of my favorite tips that has been game changing for me is that I have visual cues and reminders of my mini routines everywhere. What I have found and what I know to be true when it comes to being neurodivergent and having the inattentive type of ADHD is that it takes so much mental energy and takes so much to just process all the big and small and in the middle decisions of the day, to where it can take you an hour or 2 hours without, and that's not even an exaggeration for those of you who work with this and who have symptoms of this. It can take you an hour or 2 hours to get started for your day, not because you are wanting to waste the time and not because you are trying to procrastinate, but it takes that long for your brain to put together, okay, these are the things that I have to do, and this is the thing that is the most important, and this is what it looks like for me to do this one task that, again, I may do every day, but it's consumed, it takes care of, or is made up of all these smaller tasks as well. And so your brain kicking all that into overdrive, it takes a whole lot of, again, energy. And so that is real labor for your brain. That is real labor for your nervous system, to where it takes out the ability for you to do the actual things that you're gearing up to do. So by the time you even get started, even if you remember the things that you want to do, it's very hard for you to do it to completion, or it's very hard for you to want to even start it because you've already worked really hard on getting the mental game up to motivate yourself to get started. So what I've done is I've written out a lot of my most basic routines and the things that I need to keep track of, and put them in strategic places around my home, to where all I have to do if I feel dysregulated, or if I'm feeling overwhelmed, or if I don't know what to do, I literally just look up and it's right there in front of me. So I'm going to give you a few of those examples. So I'm going to start with my bedroom. In my bedroom, right next to my bed, I have my vision board at the top, and then I have a lot of these little smaller schedules for myself. So I have one dry erase board that's made for the week. So it comes pre-made with Sunday through Saturday. And what I have on that board is I have all of the different self-care and health tasks that I'm going to do throughout the month. And so on the first Saturday, I do a certain thing for myself. And on the second Saturday, I have a certain thing for myself. But on the dry erase board, I have it listed for the Sundays. On the first Sunday, I wash my hair. On the second Sunday, I do another self-care task. On the third Sunday, I wash my hair again. On the fourth Sunday, I do another self-care task. And then on Monday, I have written down that that's where I go get my car washed on the first Monday of the month. And then on the third Monday of the month, when I used to have a housekeeper come in, that's when I would try to have her come in to make sure that she cleans my home. Also on Sunday, I have under there that that's where I always fill up my water bottles for the week, because you know, again, a lot of times these really basic tasks that you need to take care of, they take so much energy just to remember them and then to execute them. And before I go even further, if you have ADD, if you have any type of neurodivergency, you know that what I'm saying is not an exaggeration. And I think sometimes when we say these things out loud to people who don't get it, who are neurotypical, who maybe they do struggle with some procrastination sometimes, and they can also be a little bit disorganized. When they hear someone who talks about this, it seems like, okay, now you're just tripping. Like you can't even fill up your water bottle. And yes, I will go days. I will go days not drinking anything. And it's not even that I don't drink, that I drink soda or I drink coffee or something. Instead, if I do not already have water in front of me, I will go the whole day without drinking water. So I need to, or maybe drink a cup or two. So I need to be very mindful about putting these things out there and being proactive with these habits, because otherwise it doesn't get done. And I think a lot of people who are neurodivergent have very similar stories about very basic tasks in their life. And it can cause a lot of embarrassment and shame and even criticism within yourself, thinking, this is so simple. Why can't I do that? Well, it's because your brain has a makeup that makes it difficult to do these things. So that's why having these fail safes are important. So I have this weekly dry erase board for that. And why I always have dry erase boards is because things change. Sometimes things change with your schedule. Sometimes you try out a routine and you find that it doesn't work. And so you need to have flexibility to where you can arrange and move and readjust as possible. The next schedule that I have on my wall is like an 11 by 14 poster board that I made on Canva and then I had printed at a local FedEx, something like that. Maybe it's like 12 by 15. I don't know. And I had them laminated and it says our daily schedule. So I was finding that when it came throughout the week as well, me being able to know what I'm doing with my son as far as special activities or even the days that I do certain workout things, that was really hard for me to keep track of. So there's a list and this has different colors. Colors are very motivating and sparking your brain, really sparking my brain and helping me categorize what each of these schedules are for. So that way I don't look at my wall and there's just a whole bunch of words. Just a whole bunch of words, which my brain would completely zone out. But this one, it has a pink heading that says our daily schedule. And then it has the days of the week listed down vertically. And then for each of those days, I have what my top task of that day is. So on Sunday is games and crafts with my son. On Monday is cook with mommy. On Tuesday is wash dishes, teaching him how to wash dishes. On Wednesday is him helping me fold laundry. On Thursday is him helping me wash dishes again. On Friday, we're sweeping and brooming. And on Saturday, we're doing laundry again, folding and everything. And we also have a movie night. So that has been very helpful for me because as a mom and a business owner and everything and just working with myself, I could feel like I felt a lot of guilt around I am not spending enough time with my son and I'm not being intentional about it, though I want to be. So I made it so that, okay, on these different days of the week, this is the activity that I do. And let me just say this, I'm not going to go through all the lists just for time's sake, but these lists are also very helpful because when you're neurodivergent, you may have the best schedule rocking in the world, but are you going to complete it perfectly every day? Absolutely not. Are you going to complete it perfectly a few times a week? Maybe. So having these things of certain days already kind of laid out for you, it also eliminates the mental pressure of, okay, there's these lists of things that I want to do. Now I have to pick from this list. But you can also just look at it and say, okay, today is Wednesday. All right. Today on Wednesday, we do laundry. And I have like in little parentheses, my own little workout thing that I do for myself in the same place as well in a different color. And so, okay, Wednesday, we're going to fold some clothes today and I'm going to lift a couple weights. Great, because I have strength training on that day. So that is very helpful for me. Okay, so that is the one that takes a little bit more explanation. If y'all want me to share pictures of this on social media, let me know so that you can kind of see more what I'm talking about and we can go for there. I do the same thing when it comes to my skin routine at night because I do skin cycling where on the first day you cleanse and then the second day you exfoliate and then the third day you do retinol, like yada, 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 yada. So I have the days of the week that I do those things. And so that's what rotates versus if I have to do it perfectly on a 4 day cycle, I'm gonna forget a night. Some night I'm just gonna take my makeup off, wash my face, and I'm not applying nothing else. Like, because I'm still getting into the routine of my wind down routine with my skincare to be something that's meditative and something that is really beautiful for me. I really feel like I'm going to get there, but I'm still building that as a habit. So until that becomes something that I do ritualistically without even thinking about it, I need to have these visual cues. And it's okay if there's something in your life that you relate to when you think about that you're building something to be a habit to where it's more instinctual and subconscious to you. On the way there, it's okay to have these visual cues.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
As our country continues to grow and make new meaning of the intersection between current and historical events, it is so important to stay connected to the voices and the leaders who are influencing what progress, connection, equality, and truth mean to us as Black people. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection from some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths on NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, how would you spend it? Would you find a way to spend it taking care of others, or would you do what can be the hardest thing for us to do sometimes, which is invest it in ourselves? Therapy is one of the best ways you can practice self-care with a healer that gets it. As both a therapist and someone who regularly attends sessions with her own healer, I know full well how vital a connection with a trusted professional is to help you on your way. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BGH today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BGH.
All right, let's talk about the other ones. So the second thing that I do is I have running to-do lists, of course, but what I do that may be different from what a lot of other people teach is that I will go in order for what is at the top of the to-do list and work my way down. And the reason why that is different than what some folks say that you need to either do your hardest task first or your easiest task first. And sometimes, you know, when I do my to-do list digitally, sometimes I will write it down, but even when I write it down, I'll probably kind of rank what needs to be done today and or in what order, or I'll put like a little star about the things that need to absolutely get done like this morning and then like the rest, let the rest go. So sometimes I do prioritize, but I have found when I'm very either dysregulated or overwhelmed or I'm feeling really behind, it is best for me to eliminate all the decision fatigue that comes with having the disorder and trying to work through things is I will take the list in whatever form it is in, and I just start at the top. I start somewhere. Instead of me having to scan it and prioritize and work through all the mental chatter, whatever is at the top, I do that. So if I have a list of things that I have to do for work, and I'm feeling very overwhelmed to the point that I can't get anything done because I don't know where to start, I will start at the top of the list. And so if the first thing at the top of my list says clean my makeup brushes, I'm going to go and clean my makeup brushes, because being able to check that thing off my list gives me the motivation to keep going. It makes me feel like I've accomplished something. It makes me feel like I've made movement. So now I can actually move on to the other things, and it's almost like, maybe sometimes folks who have ADD or ADHD, you know the concept of body doubling, right? That sometimes just having someone else in the room with you, you don't need to talk to them, you don't need to interact with them, but just having someone else in the room helps you get your tasks done. And there have been many a time that I've wished I just had someone around me just to kind of coach me or parent me and say, okay, Sheena, it's time to do this. That's your only task. Just sit here and be over me and help me move forward. But what I found when I do this, it's almost like I have my own internal coach that is just telling me the list is my coach. And so my coach said, do the brushes. All right, brushes down. What's next? And I just go down the list. My coach has already given me a list on what I need to do. So that is helpful for me. Again, there may be folks who either have ADD or ADHD or who specialize in executive functioning who are screaming at the podcast right now, and that's totally fine. I have done all the ways, and this, when I'm very overwhelmed, works the best for me. So with that said, the third thing that I do is I do rank my projects, and I can't start the next one until I am done. So I am lucky enough to have a career where I do something that I love. I love being here. I love helping women. I love creating courses. I love creating workshops. I love I love teaching at events. Event hosting is not my favorite thing, but when we are all there in the same room, I love seeing your faces. I love helping y'all. Like, that is the thing. But delegating event planning is absolutely what I need to step into more, which I'll talk about in a moment. But with that said, when you have ADD or ADHD, hyperfixations is a thing where it is very easy for you to pick up new hobbies and new projects and, you know, the flavor of the week. And it's very hard for you to follow through with completion because you have your hands in a lot of different things. So what I've started to do the last year or so, which has been very, very helpful, even though it's, I'm not going to say anything else negative about that. It has been very, very helpful for me is I have a running list of all the different ideas of projects and things that I want to do. And what I used to do is allow myself to kind of skip around and work on everything a little bit at a time. And what I do now is I have all my projects listed, and it's a running list, and I add and I move things around as far as priorities. But until the first project is done, I cannot start on the next one. Or if another project is finished, I can't go and kind of work on that a little bit until the first one is done. And so that has helped so much with the book writing, which has been a journey. It has been a journey. I say every time I talk about this that I have so much respect for people who write books, who are not writers. I am a talker and I am a teacher. And I know lots of things, but as far as putting it all down into paper, into, a written system, I've always hated writing papers. If I could get a PhD where all I had to do was create PowerPoints and talk to y'all, I would have 3 or 4 PhDs right now. But the fact that I would have to do research papers and dissertations, like, why? Like, can I make you just a really badass diorama? Like, I was so happy to be done with my master's degree because of that. And again, I would have loved to become a doctor, but our projects only were visual projects only. So for me, writing is very hard. I would give y'all easily 10, 12 hour workshops if I could all the time, but I know how powerful having things written is to be able to reflect back to it, to be able just to get it on Amazon for under $25. Like, that is what I really want to be able to offer. So ranking my projects has been really helpful in making progress with the books. Now the books are finally with editors for their first rounds, which is very exciting. I've gotten revisions back, which is more than just a few things. I actually have to write more, so God help me, but it's on the list and I'm going to push forward on that. So that helps me not pick up other things or to tell myself that this is a reward. When I get done with this one, I get to work on these other really exciting things that I have on my to-do list. The fourth thing that I do is when it comes to my to-do list, I do have both a digital and physical list, but I try to transfer my physical list to my digital ones. So I use a project management tool called Asana. I know right now, at least in a lot of spaces and folks that I follow, Notion is the one that a lot of people have moved over to. I know there's ClickUp and some other ones as well, but Notion is the one, again, in the circles that I follow that people love. And I watch it. It looks gorgeous. It looks dynamic. Like, it looks like so functional and fun, but it is a lot for me and my brain and my running list of things to do to try to transfer everything that I have over and make it work for what I want. So moving to Notion is one of the things on my list to learn the platform and make it, you know, beneficial to me to download for someone who's going to say, well, there are templates for you to download. Girl, I still have to download a template. I still have to adjust it. I still have to do all this stuff. Again, that is something for me to do on down the road. But right now I use Asana. And what I do in Asana is I have a running list of all my different tasks and everything, and I will reorder them. I will reorder them to say, okay, this needs to go at the top, or this is the one that's the most important, or this is what comes next. And that's what's very helpful for me to kind of check things off and for them to disappear. So I get a lot of pleasure, especially if I'm feeling very overwhelmed and just needing to kind of have a tangible trade-off from what I'm writing down. I love getting typing paper, just blank typing paper, no lines. I just need to be free. That might be a little bit of Sagittarius coming out, but I just need to be free. I don't need to be confined with how big I need to write and where the lines are supposed to go and everything. So I will a lot of times just make a big running to-do list of whatever's in my mind and brain dump whatever's in my mind. And I may go off of that, but I find that it's really great for me to eventually transfer that list to my digital one. And sometimes I'll do something on my notepad, but to transfer that over. My goal is to combine all of my lists that I have in all these different places throughout the years into one place. And so then from then on, I only have one notebook that's just for the written to-do list. And then I have my one digital platform that is for the digital to-do list versus have multiple lists all over the place. Jumping in post edit with a little mini insert here. So when I talk about combining all my to-do lists, I do not have it as a separate task to take all my to-do lists and then write them up. That sounds like an overload. And it seems, I think that if I tried to do that, I would see all the lists of things that I've tried to do over, who knows, maybe even a year long process, and then get caught up in so much I need to do. So I do with this task that I want, kind of similar to the other ones, which I just deal with what is in front of me, meaning I have what is affectionately known in the ADHD neurodivergent community as a doom pile, which is where you just have a pile of different either materials or crafts or items that you need to put up, just all thrown into a pile. The way I work through my doom pile is a way that I know a lot of people work through it. I do not try to organize it. Some people try to sort it into categories and take it from there. I deal with whatever is on top, and then I work through that, and then I go to what's next, and then what's next, and then what's next. So in my doom pile, which right now I'm looking at, is right next to my desk, is a pile of papers and mail I haven't sorted, to-do lists, and some other, you know, things as well. So when I step to do this, I'm just going to take this first envelope that's on top and then sort it, shred it, do whatever I need to, and go to the next thing. Once I get to a piece of paper that is a to-do list, I'm either going to notice what I've already done and completed and celebrate myself for that. You know, this is a lot of this is learning how to celebrate and be proud of yourself and feel the relief of it. And if there's anything else that's still there, add it to my new current list. Or a lot of times there's things on the list that time has passed, things have moved on, they resolve themselves that are no longer needed. So that is how I'm combining all of my lists. Just as I go along, as I find them, as I find the notebooks, I clear out those pages, and then I put that notebook into, I have a notebook drawer that I collect all of my very pretty journals and journals that I have not done anything with. And I will either rip out those papers, clear them out, and then put them in the note in the journal drawer so that I'm not tempted to use this journal for a new thing that I'm keeping track of. So, and talking about journals and me keeping a to-do list in my journals as well, in addition to pieces of paper, let me go ahead and talk about what I do for that. Number five, the fifth thing that I do is I stay away from the journal section in stores, and I stay away from Barnes and Noble sections because your girl loves to collect journals. And at one time I used to have a journal for a personal to-do list. And I used to have a journal that was just for gratitude in this area. And then I had a journal that was for manifestation. I would have all these different things, which in theory sounds great. And I watch other people who do that. For me, it was just a lot more things for me to take care of. So I have put myself on a journaling freeze, on a new journal freeze, and I'm not allowed to buy anymore until I am done with the ones that I have. So, but I will say my favorite type of journal to get are the ones that have Coptic binding. Coptic binding are my favorite because I can open them and they lay flat and they're just more flexible for me. So that is my number five. Number six thing that I do is I batch my day tasks. So this may be easier to do for some versus others, especially if you work for yourself. But I would imagine that even for some of y'all, depending on the job that you have, you might be able to skew this way more than not. So I have that I do certain things on certain days. So on Mondays, I'll just tell y'all what I do. So on Mondays, they are kind of my admin and spillover day from the things I didn't really get done the week before, including if I did not record a podcast episode on Thursdays. Thursdays are my official recording days. And a lot of times the recording does not happen on Thursdays. I don't know what it is about it being a few days before the podcast is supposed to come out, or maybe this, the topic of this episode is the reason why working under a deadline makes me feel so much more inspired. Mondays, if I haven't recorded the podcast episode, I'll record on that day. If I have any errands, doctor's appointments, things like that, I usually keep those on Mondays. And then on Tuesdays are my client days. Tuesdays, I see my private clients. I will do group calls in the evening. I'm going to be starting doing professional consultations, so like group mentorship for professionals and stuff. So if that's something you're interested in, stay tuned to the newsletter or my other podcast, the Business of Healing podcast, because that will be coming back with new episodes very soon. But that is on Tuesdays. And in the morning on Tuesdays, I spend time with my son, Aiden. My son does speech therapy. So I usually just kind of consider the mornings to be family time or mom time, parenting time, whatever it may be, until the second half of the day, which I am now in work mode. On Wednesdays are our self-care days. So that's where I do therapy. That's where I have, if I have anything body related that I need to take care of, physical therapy, anything like that, that's when I try to do that. Thursdays, again, are the recording days. So recording podcasts, sometimes trying to record TikToks and Reels, but right now that kind of spills over into Mondays. And then on Fridays, again, that is client days, admin, finance stuff, emails that I still need to respond back to, those types of things. Having these things batched also eliminates the decisions of, okay, what do I need to do today? What is the priority? If I do decide to work on other things throughout that day, that is fine, but at least I know where my overall objective of that day is. And also it stops me from feeling guilty if there are a million other things that I want to do. The decision's already been made for me. Mondays are for this, Tuesdays are for this, and Thursdays are for this. So I feel more freedom putting it off until it's assigned day, when I don't have to battle with wondering if I'm using my time productively or not. Also, it helps to know what my bucket days are too, especially when it comes to spillover days and doctor's appointments and all the things that come up, because I already know I don't really have to worry about, as much as I can, scheduling my doctor stuff on a client day, because I know that that's what Mondays are for, you know, and maybe even Wednesdays might be a flex day, or of course Thursdays as well. Thursdays, if I'm doing podcast interviews or something like that, that may also be a part of it. If you are working a traditional job or a 9-to-5 job to where you have different tasks all the time, as much as you can, if you want to put certain types of meetings with certain departments on one day, or you make your deck presentation on Thursdays and that is your set day, so that way you can prioritize the other things throughout the week, and then you can spend Thursday and flow and know that Thursday is your creative day, or know that Wednesday is your dump day. Wednesday is a day that I do all the things that I've been procrastinating on, all the things that I don't really want to do, all the grunt work. Wednesday is my grunt work day. You know, you can theme it that way as well. But I would really encourage you that if this is something that sounds intriguing to you, that you adjust it to a way that feels good for you and that makes sense for you. The seventh thing that I've done is I have a visual list of my hobbies, which is on my vision board. So I have, actually, let me find the picture for it. I thought I took it off. Let me see. So this part of this reason that this can be hard, I don't think it's just neurodivergency, but I think it's also, again, I really like working. I love what I do. I have a lot of placements in my 10th house, for those of you who know what that means. So a lot of my life, a lot of just how I'm wired, is around work. I have done amazing in finding balance with that. But sometimes when I'm just resting, I'm like, huh, what could I do right now? And I forget the fact that I have a whole big old list of hobbies and things that I can get into. So I'm outside of my hyperfixations for the moment. So I have made a list of my hobbies. Again, it's on the wall right next to my bed. I just look up and it's right there. And it has all the categories of the things that I like. So I have my hobbies listed in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 different categories. The categories are the hobbies I like to do that are exercise related, the ones I like to do that are arts related, my hobbies that are sports related, my hobbies that are culinary related, my hobbies that are education related, all my nerd stuff, my hobbies that are more cultural related, and my hobbies that are nature related. And then the last one is miscellaneous fun. So just things that I love to do with folks. So, and that category is things like board game nights, karaoke, going out dancing, live music shows. And so I have this visual reminder of all the things that I love and things that make me and things that bring me joy for me to tap into, so that I don't get stuck into just vegging out in life and just kind of time going by, but I'm not intentionally doing things for myself. I will sometimes look at this list and look at my schedule to see, okay, how much fun, how much pleasure, how much, in addition, because I'm really good about rest these days, y'all. I'm very proud of myself for that. But as far as fun and pleasure, sometimes if that's not already in my schedule and on a routine, then I might miss it. And I'm so happy because I recently found some social clubs and folks here in Houston that have all the things that I love on a schedule. So I'm going to be getting into that, hopefully. But yeah, so I have a list. I have that running list of my hobbies as well. For you, if you want to just keep it on your phone and your notes, or if you need it up large and in charge like me, then that might be helpful for you as well. The other visual thing that I have is a visual list of things that I'm grateful for. So in my office, I'm in my office right now recording. I have a giant dry erase board. I want to say it is maybe, if it's not 3 feet by 4 feet, it is 5 feet by 6 feet, but it basically takes up the entire wall. And so that is so helpful. Again, if you are neurodivergent and you know the power of a brain dump and just getting everything out, dry erase boards are my favorite things to be able to kind of map things out. But what I decided to do with this dry erase board is right in the middle, I have a giant list of all the things that I'm grateful for. And the reason why I have that is one, to remind myself to do my gratitude practice. My gratitude practice, especially as someone who's recovering from childhood trauma, can be very much avoidant, be very much hypervigilant. Sometimes it is very easy. It's one of the things the skills that I'm building is to learn how to look at the things that are good in my life, the things that are going well for me versus the things that are not. Or when I see the things that are good, to not try to plan ahead for when something bad might try to attack my good thing. Not because I think that the good thing is going to weigh, but it's just me trying to anticipate life's protection, life's ebbs and flows. But what I've found is you co-create those things, and also it stops you from being able to be present in the moment. Yeah, sure, something negative might happen down the road, but I'm missing out on being here now today. And also, I'm also creating a story that says, even though as much as I say, I'm not saying that it's temporary, it's stopping me from being able to be fully embodied with what I have in front of me. So I have this giant to-do list, or not giant to-do list, I have this giant gratitude list that goes from the top all the way down to the bottom of all the things that I'm grateful for. So I'll just read a couple to you at the top. So thank you for my incredible partner and best friend. Thank you for my super fun and loving friend tribe. Thank you for my confidence and security in who I am. Thank you for my travel adventures. Thank you for my intelligence. Thank you for my beauty and sexual confidence. Thank you for my fun and loving moments with my son. And in between a lot of these things, I have some things that I'm co-creating and manifesting. And, you know, if you're into manifestation, a lot of times, or just faith in general. We're taught to call things that are not as if they are. We are taught to proclaim things and to create things and to write the plan out and make it plain, you know? So this gratitude list is there for me to remember to do my gratitude practice, to be reminded of everything that I have in front of me as well. And then also to be mindful of the fact that I'm constantly manifesting. And right next to my gratitude list, I have a list of things that help me stay spiritually and emotionally clean as well. So that if I do ever feel dysregulated or off kilter, I can just look up at this list and there's literally a list of things for me to do to get recentered. And so again, even though there are a lot of skills and tools that I do have that are deeply ingrained in me and deeply, deeply ritualistic and deeply, I don't even have to think about it. They are very unconscious to me. Having these reminders of all these other things for me to do as well is so good because it helps me get out of my little box sometimes when I'm feeling stuck. Again, if y'all want to see pictures of this on social media, on Instagram or whatever, let me know and I will share them. The ninth thing that I do is I have a weekly schedule. I have a standard weekly schedule. So there is a PDF that when I had the planner, that was one of the additional, it was an insert inside the planner, and then also you could download it as well. For those of you who don't know, 2 years ago, during COVID, I published a planner that was gorgeous. It was gorgeous, but there are so many issues with the printing, and so I decided to pause doing that before bringing it back. But the planner was gorgeous. It was the most beautiful thing in the world. I'm so proud of it. And one of the inserts, I had you write out what is your weekly schedule that you're going to repeat every week. And so I think it would start from like 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. And so for you to do blocks of how you prioritize your time, where you're going to prioritize self-care, where you're prioritizing your social time, where work is going to go, when are you traveling, when are you bathing, when are you bathing versus taking a bubble bath, right? Because for some of us, we have a deep spiritual ritual around our baths, which may be different from how we treat our showers. And so whatever, all the things, when you're getting your nails done, all that stuff. And so I have that recurring list as well, or I have that schedule that I use to keep me on track so I know how my day is supposed to go, so that my day is not just this wide open wonder of me trying to figure out what I'm going to do. Now, again, I'm flexible with that. All these things I'm flexible with, if that wasn't clear. I may have all these lists, but one thing that you learn with neurodivergency is that if you are not flexible with the ways that you show up, you're going to constantly be beating yourself up and criticizing yourself. And that is not fun. So, but for me, I have a weekly calendar. So I know when my morning routine starts and when it ideally is supposed to end. I know ideally when I'm supposed to be dropping my son off at school or at his grandma's or whatever place he's going to that day while I'm working, and then what time I'm picking him up. I know ideally what time dinner starts, and I know what days I do meal preps, and I know what day I will attempt to do grocery runs. And again, there's flexibility, but this eliminates, I mean, how many decisions is that? That's probably like 200 decisions. And that's not an exaggeration, between when to get up and when to come down and when you're doing laundry and when you're washing dishes and when you're doing all this other stuff. To have it all in one place is priceless. So I have that weekly calendar, but as life changes, as I figure out what works and what doesn't work, then I make adjustments. So for example, my son is no longer in the school that he's in. So I have been balancing working from home with having a 4 or 5 year old around as well. And so I had to readjust my schedule with that. Otherwise, I just felt like I wasn't getting anything done. And I'm also failing as a mom because I'm not prioritizing enough time with him, but also have to, you know, make money so that we can live. So there was that. Then I had to adjust the schedule once he started to go to be with family throughout the day. And now I've learned something else about what time he needs to go to family, because it makes his day better and it also makes my day better, and I'm able to get more things done. So now I'm readjusting this weekly schedule, and it just helps. It helps to have a plan. Number 10. This actually goes with the to-do list stuff from before, but I try to delegate all of my help items that are on my list first as much as I can. This is a very, very, very new revelation for myself, but let me tell you what this means. On my running to-do list, if there's something on my list that said, ask Tony to help me with this, ask Lisa to do this for me, hire this person to help me with this, I would kind of get to those things when I got to them. In the same way that I was saying before, I would just start at the top and go all the way down. And then whenever I got to it. But with that said, by the time I get to that item, it may be days, if not weeks, if not even months sometimes, before I'm actually asking for help for something that's been left pending. And so I've been trying to, if there's something that's help related, that there's an outside person that's going to take care of something for me or help me with something, to put that at the top of the list versus waiting to get to it. Sometimes it can be hard to do those things for me. I'm going to speak for myself. For me, because when it comes to delegation, sometimes I want to handhold people more than they need to. So when I think about my assistant, Sarah, who's phenomenal, I love her so much. She is the best. I want to be able to present the task in such a way, especially if it's something that's new or something that has a lot of moving parts. I want to be able to be fully available to, you know, make a Loom video to guide her through it and ask her all these questions, when all I really need to do is just say, hey, Sarah, I need you to take care of this for me, and just send her a voice note, because I use a voice messaging text to contact my team. Just send her a voice note and say, hey, I need you to take care of this task. These are some things that I have in mind. Let me know if you have any questions, and let her do it. Right now, my taxes, my accountant reached out to me maybe a month or two ago saying, hey, Just fill out this form when you're ready, and we'll take it from here. Ask me if I filled out that form. Y'all, so all this help-related stuff are the things that I need to pass off first, because it's also helpful to let people help you. So the first thing is me trying to overdo and overshow up when it comes to this. This is partly the perfectionism as well, and feeling like it has to be a certain way. Also, really the inability to receive help sometimes. You know, I think sometimes the procrastination is because you're so, I'm so used to doing things on my own. And so I'm trying to relearn, I'm trying to teach myself the ability to receive and to allow others to do for me and for me not to have to be a one-person ship all the time. With that said, number 11, the 11th thing that has really helped me is to really work on some body work and somatic experiencing as far as my trauma work to help target the trauma that makes me avoid keeping to schedules and keeping the routines and being safe within that. So all the things that I've really talked about, a lot of things I've really talked about right now, especially the first thing where I'm talking about the visual cues for how I set up my day and all the little routines and everything that I have. There is a part of me that I know is connected to the neurodivergency that makes it hard for my brain to stay focused on something and to keep all these things in my remembrance. And also there's real PTSD that keeps me in this fight or flight mode that if I had a routine, if I was doing the same static thing every day, my nervous system would need to shift from being, okay, what's the next thing? What's the next thing for me to do? And being off and on to now I'm neutral. Now everything is ho-hum. Now everything is boring. And so what is it about my trauma? I know for sure there's a part of this that's trauma related that is afraid of things being boring. It's afraid of me being a routine, whether or not it means that life is not going to be any fun anymore. You know, that boring part, whether or not that means once I'm actually in routine, does that mean that something bad is going to come to take me off routine? You know, I'm too comfortable. So now there's going to be a car crash or someone's going to get sick or, you know, someone's going to lose their job. Like there's going to be something devastating that comes once I get too comfortable and too much in my routine. And so thinking about that and talking about that does not change the fear that's in my body when I think about being in a daily routine every day without and following it consistently. As much as there is a relief that comes with that thought, a lot of the fears that I just mentioned come up as well. And I know for sure that that is based in my complex PTSD. I know for sure that's based in some things that happened growing up and things that didn't happen growing up for me, and the things that I've had to learn how to operate in life to stay safe is you got to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And staying in that state all the time is not healthy. It's not healthy for your body. It's not healthy for your mind, for your spirit, and your ability to enjoy the life that you've worked really hard to create. So focusing on somatic experiencing and where that fear is stored in my body to release it, where the anxiety is stored in my body to release it so that I can actually keep these routines and habits that I want to do. There's no one that's telling me to do these things. I have created so many little rituals and pockets in my life that I think are really beautiful. And so when I think about being able to follow a routine every day, that's how I know that this is actually helping, because there's not as much fear or anxiety as there was before. I'm actually really excited about it. I'm excited about doing my little morning thing, especially with my son. He has his own little to-do list. My son is a Taurus. And so I know for sure routines are like the lifeline. They are the fountain of youth and of life for folks with my son's personality. And so he would totally thrive off having a more consistent routine in some of the ways that I'm thinking of. There are definitely other routines that we have, but there are other routines that I want to add on into our daily life. So I get really excited when I think about that. And I think there's a lot of safety and purity. And actually, there is some pleasure in me thinking about having my morning tea and then some of the other things that are on my little morning routine to-do list. That brings me a lot of pleasure thinking about it, but it's allowing my body to do it, and also putting systems in place to where it can actually happen. Number 12, related to that, is to work on any emotional triggers that may cause self-sabotage. So I can't decide if there is a fear of failure or fear of success that sometimes is getting in the way of me being consistent too sometimes. But kind of what I was just saying about imagining yourself being a routine, imagining yourself completing all the things that you want. Sometimes if you have any, either one of those fears, fear of success, fear of failure, or imposter syndrome, fear of being perceived, fear of what you want on the other side of your goals, believing that you're not good enough to have them, you will, in addition to you already kind of being impacted by the way that your brain functions, now your emotions are coming into play to make you procrastinate on what's going on, to make you drop the ball on something, to make you kind of delay taking the next step in something that's important to you. And so you got to work on the emotional stuff as well. And sometimes this emotional stuff is based on things that have happened to you before, as far as childhood trauma and neglect. And maybe it's just you're not used to change and you're stepping into something big and new and different. And so your body's trying to keep you safe. And so the emotion is not about what people said to you, what they did to you. Maybe your confidence is very, very good, but you're so used to things happening in a certain way in a certain system. And this is going to require you to surrender and it's going to require you to let go. So you got to work on the emotions around that. The 13th thing that has helped me with this is cycle syncing for self-forgiveness. So I first talked about cycle syncing, which is looking at the ebbs and flows of how your hormones affect your ability to function, your energy levels, your moods, and everything throughout the whole month. A few years ago during COVID, that it's not just looking at the days that we were bleeding or a few days before when our moods may be a little bit more heightened or we may be a little bit more sensitive, but we can actually track our cycle and see that there are certain days of the month that we have more energy than we don't. There are certain days of the month that we have more pleasure, access to our pleasure, more access to our joy. There are certain days of the month that don't even try to get anything done. And when you pay attention to it and how it shows up specifically in your body, you'll be able to get to the place where you know, okay, on day 16 of my cycle, this is what I'm going to feel and this is what I'm going to think. And on day 23 of my cycle, this is what I'm going to feel and this is what I'm going to think. And this is going to be my energy level to where you can predict all this stuff. So with me becoming aware of cycle syncing the last couple of years, it has made it really, really helpful for me to practice some self-forgiveness when it comes to the 2 weeks of the month where I'm really not going to get anything done. And before I would, because right before that, you have all this energy. I have all this energy. I'm like knocking things out. I'm so productive. Like, I feel like I can change the world. That's kind of where I am right now. And in the next couple of days, things are going to change. And every month, even though I know this, every month I'm like, okay, this is going to be different. This one is different. Like, yeah, I know that usually I have less energy, but I'm thinking about it ahead of time, so I'm going to prepare myself and I'll just work just a little bit on these things. And girl, I fool myself every month, and I get so surprised where there are a few days that like don't even talk to me. All I can do is maybe just show up for my sessions and for my clients, but everything else, I'll see you when I see you. So that's a little bit of exaggeration. There are some months that I do actually pay attention to that wisdom and I plan out to not do things on certain days, but then there are some months that I am very stubborn and I try to operate from willpower. But all that to say, if you start to become attuned to your body and you start to know your rhythms and you start to know your patterns, you can plan ahead of time and know that this is not you, it's not you being lazy or procrastinating or inconsistent. It's just how your body works. And so it offers you the grace for you to move forward without criticizing yourself and also to put some things into place to help you with that. So maybe you do need to batch some things ahead of time if you can. Maybe you do need to proactively schedule out only meetings or projects that are very, 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 very low lifts on the days of your cycle that you know that you don't have any energy. If you're able to, if you are an entrepreneur or you are able to be someone who makes your own schedule, making those the days that you have off completely, making that an errand day versus a day that you have to use whatever may be very brain power focused, so that is more body based, right? So that is very helpful. Number 14, this goes back to the to-do list. I actually combine my personal and my work to-do list on the same list. Again, this is something that is, depending on who you're talking to and who's supporting you, they may tell you to do something else. For me, I found that it was too much. And I also found that I was still going back and forth between the two lists anyways. So it's been better for me to put everything on the same list and then rank and prioritize as I go along. And then again, if I get to a day or a moment to where I do not have the mental capacity to rank and reorder and reprioritize, then I will just start at the top of the list and go down. And today, to date, it has always been helpful. It has also helped my productivity versus not. And with that said, the last thing that I do, or the last tip I want to give when it comes to working with ADHD for me, and it's related to the to-do list as well, is the night before I go over what my running to-do list is or what I'm going to do right before bed, which is usually when I'm thinking about what I want to do the next day anyways. And so that when I wake up in the morning, I can just hit the ground running. And that's one of the things I was talking about at the very top of this episode, how sometimes it can take you a lot of time just to process the fact that you have things to do the next day. So if I do it the night before, it actually makes me really excited to go to sleep. Once I figure out what my to-do list is for the next day, then I can journal, and then I can meditate, and I can visualize, and then I can rest without me having this running list of tasks that are going on in my head, because the decisions for the next day have already been decided. So I'm free to be more here in the moment. And so when I wake up, I can wake up and do my gratitude and doing my meditation and do my journaling or whatever it is I need to do. And then either right after my son is dropped off, if I have him, or whatever morning task I have to do, I can jump right in with the first task because it's already been decided for me. My coach has already told me what I need to do. So that has been very helpful for me. So that is a lot, but I hope that at least one of the things has been helpful for those who need it. If you are neurodivergent or you know someone who is, please feel free to share this episode with them, and we'll love to get your feedback on what has worked for you and what hasn't. Even if it's something that's contrary to what I have listed before, or if there's something that I haven't considered, feel free to send it over to me. I'm always down for new tips and tools. And as always, take what you need and leave the rest. So that's it for today, y'all. I'm sending you so much love. And I'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.